Good morning, everyone. This morning's Thursday conference call, or as we refer to it, our water cooler call, is brought to you by Risk Cooperative, our speaker for today. And I'm going to ask Jennifer Rothstein, our board member and event lead for this particular introduction, to introduce the Risk Cooperative folks. A handout has been distributed to everybody, along with the bios. So we're going to make this short and quick. And Jennifer, please take it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for your time and participation today. I'm very happy to welcome our friends from Risk Cooperative this morning. Risk Cooperative is an innovative insurance brokerage and risk advisory practice. They help organizations globally around the world solve business challenges through three pillars of risk readiness and resilience. In the materials that were circulated prior to this call, you will find a link to a Cyber 360 survey. Please take this survey, as it was designed to help business leaders go beyond baseline cybersecurity compliance. We are planning a very exciting and first-to-market for our group ongoing series of webinars with Risk Cooperative, where we will discuss the elements of the survey and at the end of the series share the data in a final report. Please be on the lookout for upcoming announcements. And I'd like to thank Jenny Decker from Risk Cooperative for all her help with our planning for this series. So now let's begin by turning over the session to someone I'm proud to call my friend and mentor, Mr. Les Williams. He is a certified risk manager who leads Risk Cooperative's business development to help clients develop risk management strategies. He speaks and writes regularly on emerging risks such as cyber liability insurance, political risk insurance, and other complex domestic and global challenges. Hi, Les, and thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much, Jennifer, and I'm so glad that InfraGuard invited me to speak. And thank you again to Jenny Decker, our amazing director of marketing, and also Andres Franzetti. He's on the call. He's my teammate and fellow business partner and CEO of Risk Cooperative. We'll start at slide three. I know everybody has the slides in front of them, and you see the agenda before you. There's four different sections. I'll start with About Risk Cooperative. Then we're going to get into some past survey highlights to give you a flavor of the results that we got from a past survey. And then we're going to go into why it's so important that InfraGuard members take this survey, because it will help you with your own organization. Slide three. Jennifer did a great job introducing us. We were founded in 2014. We do everything and anything related to risk. Our focus is on these unique risk placements, such as political risk insurance, cyber liability insurance, and other things that you can't just really get off the shelf these days with a typical insurance play. So that's our main focus. Slide four, this is our prior year Cyber 360 survey highlights. Now, in the very last slide, there's several links that list some of the work that Jennifer was speaking to, the writing we've done, the research that we've done, but also the Cyber 360 survey that we did. It's designed to help business leaders go beyond just baseline compliance. Whenever we take these surveys, it's all technical in nature. What does your IT director say, your CTO say? This is different. This survey and some of the results that you're going to see really get to the business imperatives behind what it means to be cyber readiness, to have cyber readiness and also cyber resilience. Slides five through nine, I'll brush through these rather quickly, and you can read this on your own, but these are some of our prior survey highlights. Slide five before you, it talks about the survey we did, the last one we did, where, as you can see, the breakdown, because this is Metro DC, where we focused this survey on, predominantly government contractors. All right, so that was 34% of that were government contractors. The goal of the survey, though, is to get quite a broad brush of different industries. So when we do the New York Metro survey, it'll probably skew more towards professional services, some technology, and, of course, financial services. But the main goal is to really get a broad spectrum of what different industries are seeing. Slide six. This is the interesting slide that I addressed earlier. This is not meant to just focus in on IT leaders and CTOs and really the folks who do the bits and bytes, but really we're trying to get a broad swath of everybody. 33% of our respondents actually had some board-level position, which is pretty impressive. We also had, of course, 25% approximately had respondents from the IT department, as well as our CISOs, our Chief Information Security Officers. That was about 20%. So it's a pretty even spread. And we did it, and as we get into some of these questions as this presentation goes on, you'll understand why it's so important that we have this broad cross-section. Cyber is an enterprise risk. It does not just live within one domain, whether it be finance, IT, sales, or executive level. Really is a tone from the top, but all organizations face this insidious risk. We need look no further than the recent SolarWinds hack, which I'll address in a little bit. Slide 7. So this is an interesting slide because what it does is it shows something that Andres and Jenny and I talk about a lot. The biggest threat lies between the keyboard and the chair. Education is so often overlooked, but many times it's the one thing that can prevent cyber attacks from happening in the first place. So as you see from our pie chart, about 40%, give or take a few percentage points, conduct a cyber awareness training annually, right? About 14% almost do it semi-annually, and quarterly, about 11%. You know, we'd like that quarterly number to grow because if you just do this once a year, it's you know, you put it in a filing cabinet and you forget about it until the next year comes, right? Think about those annoying fire drills we all have to take when we all went to offices pre-pandemic, right? The fire drill would go off unannounced and you'd have a team leader that would lead you down the stairwells, all that fun stuff. Well, with cyber drills are very similar in nature of that. How you set it up, how you conduct it, this is something that needs to be done on a pretty regular basis, we think at the minimum quarterly. So these are some pretty amazing, in our eyes, results about the number of people, organizations who are doing this just on a quarterly basis. And, of course, unfortunately, some aren't doing them at all. So this was, in my opinion, because education is such an important part, really this is a shocking slide to us, and hopefully we get these numbers trending in the right direction. Cyber is not just investing in compliance and technology, but really it's investing in the education to prevent these hacks from taking place in the first place. Slide 8. This is, you can see it's split, you know, almost, I would say almost 50-50, but 46.5, 46.5 between those who have a business continuity and disaster recovery plan versus those who did not. And, of course, the remaining 7% were unaware of such documentation. The reason why it's important to have some type of business continuity and disaster recovery plan is because it goes beyond just making sure your business can bounce back, right, and be resilient and be ready for any attacks. But also, guess what? It's the bottom line. This is what C-suite executives care about. It's will you win a contract or lose a contract because you did or did not have a business continuity and disaster recovery plan? We work with a lot of government contractors in the D.C. area, and more we're helping our clients fill out these type of surveys as they're bidding on both government and private contracts, because a client does not want to work with an organization that does not have a business continuity and disaster recovery plan. So you're going to see more of these coming forward to all organizations across all industries, not just government contractors, right, to make sure that a business can stay in place, so that the supply chain for these clients remains robust. So you're going to see this idea of a business continuity and disaster recovery plan become even more important in 2021 and beyond. And finally, the last slide of this past survey that we did is on slide 9. So this 95% and 5%, these are the two percentage points I want you to kind of focus in on now. This data actually was taken back in 2015, but we think that there's not going to be a lot of differences between this. Maybe it'll be, you know, 90-10, if you will. But it's between the number of respondents who had a cyber insurance policy that's bundled versus ones that had a standalone policy. Real quick education session here. So a bundled policy is if you have cyber insurance within your general liability policy. And by the way, for non-insurance people, I'm an insurance geek. Whenever you think of a bundled policy or general liability policy, think of slip and fall. Right? That's the baseline. That's the cost of doing business in today's society, is having a general liability policy. A vast number of organizations bury cyber within that, and the problem is cyber is so intricate in the coverages that are designed in there, you really have to have a standalone policy. At Risk Cooperative, we treat it like a kidnap and ransom insurance, where you have different coverages broken out. God forbid you do get breached. Do you have things like extortion coverage, business interruption coverage, regulatory compliance? Because governments, locals, and state governments are actually charging fees to companies who get breached and expose customer information. Do you have reputational harm loss? Do you have something called paper file protection? These days, when everybody's working from home, you can walk into a Starbucks as we're all 6 feet apart. You see people on important conference calls because nobody is working in their office these days, and some folks have really sensitive documents. There's been cases in D.C. of people actually taking documents from other people, thieves, that have sensitive information. They put that on the dark web. They sell that, credit card data, medical data, you name it, right? So cyber itself is so intricate with all the coverages, we strongly advise organizations not to have that bundled. Back at the top, you see about 42% of survey respondents indicated that they had some sort of cyber liability insurance in place in their organization. Again, a number that's very low, right? We want that number to be extremely high in the 90s. But that's part of why we did this survey, is so that when people see the results, they realize where they need to course correct. We think of it as a physical, when you go to get your annual physical with your doctor. Now, those past slides, five slides or so, were on some past results. The next three slides, before I close, talk about why we feel doing this survey with InfraGuard members is so important. And we broke it down into the mantra of our organization in risk, readiness, and resilience. First, the risk. I said it three times in the past 10 minutes. Remote work has increased the risk of cyber breaches precipitously, as you guys can see from this top slide with the arrows. Geopolitical tensions, this is another issue we feel that is not going away. Last year, with the killing of the Iranian general, almost a year ago to the day, right, we, Risk Cooperative, wrote an article on this saying, be prepared for private organizations to be victims of a cyber attack from Iran in retaliation. Yes, they did hit a government website that was not very critical to the government infrastructure, but nonetheless, in the past, we've seen examples of Mondelez, which is a major food company based in Europe. They got hit out of the NotPetya attack, right? They weren't a target in this case, but they got hit based on the sophistication of that cyber attack. Also, Russia and SolarWinds. I mentioned this earlier in the presentation. We will not know for years the damage that's done with the 18,000-plus clients of SolarWinds whose data got breached. And some of them are big names, as we all read. VMware was one of them. Intel was one of them. So we see more state actors weaponizing cyber attacks in the future. And hence the questions that you see on the far right. Some of these questions consist of, do you employ a CISO, a Chief Information Security Officer? Who at your organization is responsible for your cybersecurity program? We've asked that question in the past, and it's amazing how either sometimes there'll be crickets or it'll be an IT director that nobody hears from or knows his or her name. The next slide is readiness. Companies must be aware of the value of their data. This article that you see was a Harvard Business Review article that my team wrote called Do You Know What Your Company's Data Is Worth? Because if you don't know how much the company data is worth, what is the value of your crown jewels, how do you know what to protect it or what cyber limits you need? For example, Google, they have a much higher, their data means much more to them than, let's say, CSX, the freight train operator. If Google gets hit with a massive data breach, when they're down, guess what? They can't sell ads, right? You can't access Google, and Google cannot make revenue for the time that they're down. CSX, they get hit. Yes, they will be affected, but they still have a lot of physical assets where, for example, they could still unload train cars, for example, and manually, you know, make records of what was unloaded and what was delivered. So knowing the value of your data, the enterprise value of your data, is really important. And so that's why some of the questions we're going to ask InProGuard members, what safeguards are in place to protect your sensitive information? Do you have appropriate event detection measures in place to alert you in case of an incident? So this is something that's often overlooked, but this is really important when we talk about readiness. And finally, the last piece, the last slide the last slide at least for that, that's the meat of the presentation. Slide 12, resilience, tone from the top, cyber hygiene, right? This is where we get down to, you know, having a standalone cyber policy and not just an all-encompassing bundled cyber, an all-encompassing cyber policy that's embedded in a general liability policy. It's really important to have this as a standalone coverage. And there's really, really important things that we will address offline, such as war exclusion, prior coverages, bodily injury and property damage resulting from cyber incidents. Some of these things aren't spoken about or talked about a lot, but they're important because, God forbid, a cyber attack happens. If some of these exclusions are in there or aren't in there, it may mean millions of dollars to a business. So the resilience part, it's the tone from the top. It's where I started this presentation, where everybody, not just IT, everybody, especially C-suite executives, have to be involved in this. That also involves your response team. In your business continuity plan, who is on the response team and what are their roles? So these are some of the questions, as you can see in the far right there, where we will be addressing in this survey. And finally, the last slide, slide 14. This is the linked resources. I really encourage everybody on this call that's listening to read some of the things that we have written and talked about, as well as the survey. It's that link that I was addressing on the far right. You can see Jenny did a good job embedding that Cyber 360 survey link. This will get into a lot of the meat of what I've spoken about with you guys today on the phone, as well as address any questions. So with that, I'll kind of stop there, and I will hand things back to Jennifer Rothstein.
Thank you so much, Les. That was fantastic. And we wanted to open it up to Q&A, and I think, Dave, are you going to run with that?
Yeah, and, first of all, thank you, Les. I'm really impressed with this material, and I think our members are. And I want to amp it up a little bit. We are looking to have a more engaged membership, which the callers on this call, those that participate, they are definitely our engaged members. So as a little reward, Les, I'll let you help me manage it. We're going to give a raffle gift to somebody who responds to the survey link, because I think it adds a lot of value. And it is also great for InfoGuard to support this effort. So when you get all of the results or you get all of the surveys from the folks, we'll figure out a way to provide a little incentive gift to one of the participants, maybe
I
two.
I like that.
All right?
I like that.
And I'll be honest, we have a challenge coin and we have our InfoGuard pins. We're not meeting in person, so it was a small source of revenue. We've been kind of limited, but, you know, we're going to give back to those that engage and participate. I'm going to let the floor open up with a question, and I'd ask you to just come at one at a time and not talk over one another. So can you go ahead and ask your questions at this point? We'll take caller number one.
Yes. Antoinette.
Go ahead.
Is that okay? Yeah, okay.
Yep.
So when it comes to the insurance policies, right, for cyber, if a particular entity is not directly breached but breached through a supply chain, how is that structured? Does that apply to that, or is it exempt from that? I was just curious.
Thank you, Antoinette. I just wrote an article yesterday on that. There is something within robust standalone cyber insurance policy that's called contingent or dependent cyber insurance coverage, contingent breach insurance coverage for business interruption. It's a mouthful, but we just call it a contingent business interruption. I'm going to give you an example. Let's use SolarWinds. SolarWinds, massive breach. A lot of data was stolen from these major companies. SolarWinds has a robust technology errors and omissions policy, which covers for third-party damages, and they also have a robust first-party cyber liability policy, which covers in case, you know, SolarWinds gets hit directly, which they did. So, all right, so one is first-party, one is third-party. In your company, Antoinette, if you guys used SolarWinds, the third-party technology errors and omissions that SolarWinds had would protect you to an extent, meaning if any credit card information was stolen or you guys had to get security monitoring for your employees, SolarWinds third-party coverage would protect you. Now, in your own company, and this is what we do with our clients, we always have contingent business interruption because what it does is it covers any amounts that the SolarWinds technology errors and omissions policy didn't cover, right? So it's important to have that in case there's any gaps in coverages. And to put it to a more realistic example, you get into a fender bender on the road, on the GW bridge, and, oh, it's her fault. No, it's your fault. Well, what happens is the insurance companies get on the phone. They'll cover one will cover a certain amount because it's that person's fault. And if there's any gaps, if they didn't have insurance coverage, then your own insurance company would cover the remaining gaps. So contingent business interruption is meant to cover gaps that third-party supplier's insurance policy did not cover. That was a mouthful. Did that make sense, Antoinette?
Yeah, perfect sense, actually. Thank you.
Yep. And in some weird cases, some folks, which is rare, but some unsophisticated companies don't have third-party coverage. Therefore, it's really important that your organization has that contingent coverage so that you're covered and you won't be down for too long. So thank you for that question.
Okay, we'll take the next question. Don't be shy. Well, while they're thinking about it, Les, I just want to point out your information is timely because yesterday there was a great webinar for the quarterly threat and cyber providers evolution, and they talked specifically not only about third party but also the fourth party. You know, when you have your outsource and your outsource people outsource that, a lot of contracts are being written to include the requirement for the cyber insurance, and I guess you have to be careful because I guess it has only a certain amount of depth. If you don't have a fourth party clause in there, maybe you're caught short. So
that's right.
A good point.
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things I'll add to while we're waiting for the next question is when I mentioned standalone policy, you know, that 95%, 5% breakdown you saw, well, for those standalone policies, they come with a team of lawyers because what you just described is really important because lawyers are really key in helping to not only when some of this stuff, God forbid, when the claims process started, you need a good legal team on your side, but also the breach response team is there for you. So if you don't have a standalone policy, it's usually you getting on the phone, filing a claim, and you're playing a quarterback with all this versus you have a breach response person that's dedicated to help you and cover these sticky issues like fourth-party claims. So really important note.
Great point. Do we have any more questions? Okay, I have one more comment, relative to compliance. You know, there's a lot of requirements being put out there between different businesses, and, you know, a bank or institution might say, look, if you're going to do business with us, you have to have a SOC audit performed, or you have to have your IT security management system certified by an ISO standard. And I'm sure that in those requirements in there, I would imagine that cyber insurance would be playing a big part in order to protect everybody. I want to ask you, Les, when you have some writings that you want to share, send it our way, and we'll post it up on our social media, or if it's on yours, we'll reshare it to ours, if you let us know.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I'll work closely with Jenny Becker on that.
Hey, Dave.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Yeah, hi, Dave. This is Joe. I've got a question for them. Can you tell us how the cyber insurance premiums have evolved? How are they actually calculating the value of a cyber breach or cyber intrusion?
Yeah, so here's what's interesting. There's about three main ways where you calculate a cyber premium. The first is the industry you're in. So healthcare, just because of the value of the PHI, the protected health information data, it's so valuable because thieves are selling that in the dark web, where you'll have people go in and get tummy tucks and all types of procedures on someone else's dime, right? So the preponderance of PHI breaches are huge. So the healthcare industry is among the highest, as well as folks that are doing managed service providers, like IT outsourcers, just because you hit one of them and you hit a whole bunch of people as well. So those are the two kind of highest premiums. The second one is actually past exposures. That's how you rate cyber premiums. It's no different than typical insurance on your driving record. If you have a much better record, you're going to get better premium than if you had a worse record. What's interesting of all that, how this has evolved is, they usually calculate the exposures. So the more exposure you have, the more revenue you have at risk. That means you're more likely to get extorted for higher amounts of money. So your cyber premium is going to be a lot higher too. There's a mathematical way they do this for the science piece of that, and the science piece is the average cost of one PII record, personal identifiable information. And I forget this, it does vary, it grows every year, but it's about $249, and PHI is like around three-something. And so what they normally do is they usually multiply the number of records you have in an organization. So one human being at your company could have 8 records, right? He or she has a social security number, that's 1. She has an address, that's 2. She has date of birth, that's 3, right? So on average, about 8 or 10 records. You multiply those records times the cost of an average record, times the number of employees you have, and that gives you approximation for the amount of exposure you have. That's the science piece, right? The art piece also, like I spoke about before, is what industry are you in, right? What past data breaches have you had? And that's going to give you a number of, you know, you have X millions of dollars at risk, or if you're a smaller company, X hundreds of thousands of dollars at risk. From there, you go to the market and get a quote at, you know, $3, $5, and $10 million worth of coverage. So that's how it, and when you get all that together, right, that's going to tell you the exposure that you have, like what limits you should get. And the cost piece, and this is more of the art side of things, right? We've seen premiums grow precipitously this year on the order of 20% to 25%, mainly because of COVID-19. And all of the fallout that's happened because of that. So this, you could say that last year, 2020, was an aberration because of COVID-19. Cyber premiums were already growing because, as a whole, you're going to have more data breaches because of the crazy criminals that are out there. But COVID-19 has really accelerated it. So I hope that I answered your question of how you know what limits you get, but also how it's priced usually based on past breaches and industry and exposure, the size of your company.
Thank you.
Well, listen, thanks so much, Les, and thanks, Risk Cooperative, Jennifer. We're looking forward to having some webinars roll out through our events committee. I want to remind our members here, if you have an idea for an event and you want to see it put into our program, please get a hold of the events committee. We don't just throw stuff over the wall because our events committee is limited and can't do all the heavy lifting for it. So if you want to lead an event in any way, provide a topic, some subject matter experts, we look forward to your participation and input as we plan our 2021 calendar. Just as a note, in the last minute, our board meeting has been rescheduled because it was scheduled for the night of the inauguration day. So with respect to that, we're pushing that out to the following week, either a Tuesday or a Thursday. That's significant because we were going to cut the board meeting short, end at 6:30, and start our 2021 member kickoff meet and greet. So we wanted to have an opportunity for our members. We've had a lot of new members come on last year. We want to get them to introduce them to the executive board, the officers and the directors, our sector chiefs, and our committee chairs, so that we could get some further engagement with our membership and increase this organization's effectiveness, which is, you know, deeply appreciated by the hard work put in by our board, our committee folks, and folks like you who engage with us on this call. So look forward to that, we are going to be looking for a event sponsor. We hope to have some raffles and have some fun and mixed in with some business and as socializing as best you can virtually without everybody talking over one another. Anyway, with that, I ask you to stay tuned to next week's call. Phil will put out the agenda for that. And, again, keep your eye out on our event schedules for 2021. And, you know, Les, we appreciate the engagement with you folks. I think you're providing a significant service and product here. And this information sharing initiative is what InfoGuard is all about. So thank you, and thank your folks for that. And
my pleasure.
Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you. And thank you so much, Les, Jenny, and Andres. This is fantastic. And for the group on the call, you will see them again. So please do stay tuned.
Those linked resources, outstanding. I hope everybody takes a look at it. So, again, all right, folks. Well, again, we'll see you next Thursday and at 9:30 sharp. And